There's something for everyone at Columbia Business School. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this week's Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get that delightful moment when you can high-five the person next to you and shout, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in at the best program for you. This is a first. Normally, I talk to my guests via phone or the internet. Today, my guest is really my guest and is sitting right next to me in my office. This is an in-person interview. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Emily French Thomas, Director of Admissions at Columbia Business School. Emily, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here.
All right. So we're going to explore Columbia Business School's delicious educational menu. but before we dive into the individual programs, I'd like you to describe what ties it all together. What is the common thread between the dishes on the menu?
Absolutely. Well, I think whenever people think about an MBA or getting an MBA, a lot of the time they're thinking about maybe a transition in their career, and you know, we obviously have wonderful opportunities for that. They might be thinking about the network. They should be thinking about the network. And I think we have the best network in the world. Our alumni are incredibly engaged, and our students get to know them early, right from the start. But I think that there is a more intangible benefit to an MBA, and specifically to the Columbia MBA, and that is being able to really see the world, see business in a much more holistic way, and get that broader framework for everything you do, every decision you make as a business leader once you've graduated. And at Columbia, what we talk about the most is the entrepreneurial mindset. And to us, this doesn't mean you have to start your own company. You don't have to work at a startup. Whether you're working at a new company or an established global, you know, mega company, you need to be able to identify opportunity and identify opportunity for change, see the gaps, know where you're going to essentially insert your idea so that you can grow the company, so that you can revolutionize the industry. And that's what we're looking to create, are business leaders who think entrepreneurially. And the way we do this, we have a core in all of our programs. There are core courses, and these are the foundations of business: accounting, corporate finance, marketing, operations. Big data is a new course that we've added in the core.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and really popular and really necessary as we see that emerging
right.
in the marketplace.
Right.
And it just allows students to think about not just know all of the languages of these cores, which is important. Any C-suite executive needs to know how to speak all of these languages.
Sure.
But students learn how to look at a business case, a problem, from the corporate finance perspective, and then they look at the same problem from the marketing perspective, so they can see that any problem they face in the real world is going to be multifaceted. And this just, it's a transformational experience. I frequently hear students talk about this as transformational because they are learning how to look at the world as a whole and not as little siloed pieces. So that's one way, the core. And then the thing I think we do just honestly better than anyone else is we bring those theories into the real world. And it's being able to have access to business leaders, because there are over 3,000 corporate headquarters in New York in all different industries. No matter what you want to do, there's that industry is in New York because it's such a global center. But we are bringing these top speakers into the classroom. I frequently hear students tell stories about how they were studying a business case, and as they were reading through the business case or picking it apart and saying why the CEO did everything wrong, they kind of know there's a stranger in the back of the room. And then after a break, the stranger gets up. It's the CEO from the case.
Oh, gosh.
So very, very, you know, generous person coming and listening to how they did everything wrong. But then getting up and talking about, you know, why they made the decision they made in that moment in the real world. So it's not just this nice ivory tower. I mean, we're a wonderful research institution, so there is a lot of theory there. But it is not just that. It is actually understanding how that applies to the real world so that when students get that dream job, they actually know, they know how to use what they've just learned and apply it in business. So I think this is invaluable. And also the network opportunities, because you are also meeting all of these incredible people in class through conferences. There's a big tradition of our students going out and asking our alumni all in all different fields in New York for coffee chats while they're students. So on Thursday mornings, you don't have class, you're going to go do some coffee chats with alumni and get to know the company they work in, get to know the corporate culture there, get to know people there in case that's your dream location. Right. So it's just an incredible, there's incredible amount of access at Columbia.
That's, of course, your tagline.
That's all right, yeah. Right, it's right, very right. Center of business.
Right. And that's what it means.
Yeah.
And that when, you know, that's yeah. The essence of it.
Yeah, it's not just jargon. We try to deliver.
Right. Can you give us an overview now of the full-time program specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have two streams of the full-time program. There is our 20-month traditional program that students enter in August. It's what students think of when they think of an MBA. You enter in August, you have your semester of the core, you have a second semester with a little core and then some electives, and then you have your summer internship, and then you're in second year and you finish and get a job and you're in the world. And within that, we bring in, that's our biggest program, we bring in about 550 students a year in that entry in August. And those students are broken down into clusters of 60 to 70 students, and within that, they're broken down further into learning teams. So the core, especially, is very focused on team work, learning how to work with other people, because, of course, that's what the world is now. We very rarely work alone on things. And really learning, you know, all of those foundations in the core with your learning team, getting to know your cluster so you have this kind of home base of people that you get to know really, really well.
Can I ask, you've referred to the core many times. I have a question about the core.
Yeah.
Now, can somebody, let's say you have an accountant.
Yeah.
Does he still have to take accounting one in the core, or can he pass out of it?
That's a great question. We do have exemption exams.
Okay.
So if you're a CPA, if you're a CFA, you can test out of those courses.
Okay.
You don't have to be a CPA. You can take the test anyway and see
what
you do.
Right, but that's the easiest example.
Exactly. We find that students are happiest when they exempt out of a couple of things if they need to. If they really have expertise, then by all means, you know, don't waste
your time, right.
You will replace it with an elective.
Okay.
So you do still have to take those three credits that you weren't taking. But I think students are happiest when they do take some of the core because, again, you want that experience with your learning team, and that's primarily in the core.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And so you were describing the core, and that was the full-time program.
And then the January program, maybe I can...
Do you want to go into the January program right away, or do you want to come back? Because I was going to ask you, who do you feel is best suited to the traditional two-year full-time MBA program?
Sure. The traditional full-time MBA program could be for anyone.
Right.
So you are going to be able to find the opportunities no matter what you need to do in order to reach your goal, whatever your gaps are, you're going to be able to find those opportunities in the two-year program. It's very, you have that space in the summer internship to really do whatever you need to do. So especially...
Let's go back to the January program. Why don't you describe that and then we'll go on, because I think maybe best to...
Compare, contrast
exactly.
A little bit, yeah.
Exactly.
So the January program is an accelerated model. It's 16 months. And the difference between the January program and the traditional August entry program is that summer internship. So in August, students start in August. They have their first semester in the fall, their second semester in the spring. Their summer is their internship, and then they're back at their second year. The January students start a semester later, so they're starting in January. Then they still have class in the summer. They have that one core course and then electives in the summer. And then they move on to the second year, and they're in exactly the same place as the August entry students at that point. So everybody's mixed in together in their second year. They're taking all the same electives. There's really no easy way to differentiate between the different students, and they end at the same place. The big things to keep in mind if you're thinking about January, it's a wonderful way to kind of minimize that opportunity cost. You're not out of work for quite as long. It's a great thing. We have a lot of companies who will sponsor students. So a student, you know, who works for a company they really love might still want to get that MBA. They go to the January entry. They're sponsored by their company, and then they go back to that company when they graduate. So that's a really good model. Companies like it because, again, they don't lose their employee for as long. So that's a great model. We have a lot of people in family business who will do the January program, and in some ways, that is the one group where I think it's a little bit of an advantage because there is such a core group of family business people in the J-term that they have kind of their own mini network. If you are someone who needs to change your career in a major way. So if we think about career changes in terms of sort of three buckets, you're going to change function, you're going to change industry, or you're going to change geographic location. You can do probably one of those things if you're in the January program, but you can't do two.
Right.
And there are certain industries that to break into them, the way they're structured, they expect you to have that internship. So we have students who have...
What are some of them?
So really things like consulting, investment banking. There are some global leadership programs that are really tailored to you. You have the summer internship. They're going to hire so many associates every single year, and then they come to campuses like ours to hire those associates for an internship, and then they hope to hire them after. Those types of career changes, you're going to want to join at the August entry. I have known students to join in the January entry, say a sponsored student who thinks they're going to go back to their company, and then they take a course, their mind is blown, they know all of a sudden what they want to do with their life, and it's investment banking, and they've managed to do it. So it's not impossible, but it's really hard.
Right.
So if you are in, let's say you're in investment banking and you think you might want to do private equity. That's a change, and private equity is very difficult to break into. But to break into it, you're going to have to network. There's not necessarily the perfect summer internship that's going to get you that next job. So if you're able to network and really leverage those, you know, mornings when you can go meet with some alumni, you might be able to leverage your background, which is not entirely, it's kind of the traditional background for that move. You're more likely to be able to do that even in the January program.
I remember meeting once with Amanda Carlson, and she told me, you know, the dean of admissions at Columbia, and she told me about a time that a Columbia student had worked on a project, I believe, consulting project for a hedge fund, and through the project got the job. So it wasn't just the networking, the morning coffees.
Not at all.
He basically turned a project into an internship, which turned into a job, which is another way to go. And it kind of goes back to that point about access.
There's also school year internships. So when you don't have, once you're in electives, if you don't have class on a particular day, you can frequently, and a lot of our students do leverage this into school year internships. Again, it's not that structured working full time during the summer for a company, but it is a way to get to know the inner workings of a company, see if you like it, see what you want to do.
And they get to see if they like you.
Exactly. And a lot of people do get jobs through those. And you can absolutely do that in the January program. We have a student, she was August entry, but she was making a pretty big change. She came from a consulting background in healthcare with a healthcare focus. And she just knew that she wanted to do retail. She wanted to do strategy in retail. So that's a big change.
Wow.
And she nailed it. So she came in and she became VP of our retailing club. She was incredibly active. She did a school year internship with Michael Kors. She did a summer internship with Nordstrom's. She ended up working on a project through class with Hermes and a couple of other companies. She was just really
proactive,
making the rounds. And now she's doing strategy at Bloomingdale's. It's like her dream job. So we definitely, you know, we have those success stories, but she came in and when I was actually looking back at her, application recently, and in her essay one, she laid it all out, exactly what she was going to do. She really had that strategy down to make that big transition, and she did it.
You know, I'm thinking here, she really had an entrepreneurial mindset.
She did.
If you define entrepreneurship as the ability to identify and go after opportunities, mm-hmm. she identified them and went after them.
She absolutely did. And there's so many of those opportunities at Columbia. In some ways, it is our greatest asset, and I think what makes us unique. It is also, it makes things a little overwhelming. So I think something that makes our students stand out, and something we are looking a little bit for in an application, is that person who's gonna take advantage of the opportunity, that self-starter, that person who really is gonna go after the things that are interesting to them.
They also have to have a little bit of direction.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to stay the same. We always joke that, you know, at graduation, we're not going to withhold the diploma if they end up in a different job than they said they were going to go after.
Yeah, but, yeah. They haven't signed a contract.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? But I think people who kind of have that direction are better able to know what they value and what they care about. So when they do see something else that is good for them, they can just transition that strategy to that other thing.
Right, and they've also been able to identify a reasonable path for themselves. They've
exactly.
gone through that exercise. So.
Exactly.
What else? So clearly a sense of direction, a sense of purpose, entrepreneurial mindset are some of the things that you're looking for. What else are you looking for in the admissions process? And we're talking right now about the full-time MBA, either J-term or regular admission, September admission.
Absolutely. So for any of our applicants, we are looking really at three buckets. We're looking at and I preface this by saying we're looking at the whole application. Any one thing in the application is just a data point. So we're looking to find the whole story of the person.
Yeah, I love it when people ask me, I have an ex GMAT, can I get in?
Yeah, I have no idea is the answer to that question. You know, and we are, I think the GMAT is something people hone in on because it's a number, it's concrete. It makes you think that there's a yes or no component to it. And there really isn't. It's just a data point. But we are looking for academic achievement. So of course, you know, we do ask that students take either the GMAT or the GRE. We accept either one. If you've taken one and you're thinking of retaking, you're not happy with your score, I would stick with the one you took first and kind of see how you can improve in that. We see, I think, better results from that usually.
Can I ask you a question? This came up recently.
Yeah.
Somebody took the GMAT and basically bombed it.
Yep.
And I said, why didn't you cancel it? Because now you can cancel scores.
It's true.
And she said, well, I was advised not to cancel because then schools can see improvement.
Yep. I think she's right.
Okay.
I love to see, if I see a candidate who has maybe an average or maybe even a below average GMAT score, but they've taken the GMAT several times, they've made improvement, and you can see that, you know, they may not be great test takers, but they are persistent and they are passionate about what they're doing. They are willing to put the work in. And you think about so many industries where someone, you know, yes, if you're brilliant and you're able to just nail it the first time, good for you. That, you know, that is going to give you some advantage maybe, but the people who are really successful are the people who will work for it. So at the end of the day, I would rather see that low score and see what she did with that and where she went with that than just see a bunch of cancels that I don't really know what that means.
You're not even going to see the
cancels. I'm not even seeing it. Yeah, that's
you're
right.
You're not going to see that soon.
Yeah.
You know, somebody shows up with a 680. You're saying that in some respects it might be better if you saw the 620, the 640, the 660 that preceded it?
Yep, absolutely. Because I think, you know, we don't need people to be perfect. We don't think that people are perfect. We don't believe that that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely don't need you to come in perfect the first time out. We just need to see who you are and what you're willing to do for what you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, great. What do you feel are the recruiting strengths in terms of recruiting on the other end?
So I might... Is it okay to go back and finish talking about what we're looking for in admissions? Because I
sure.
think we only hit on the GMAT.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
So in addition to academics, we're also looking for a professional experience. And in some ways, that's going to be really important because we want to see what you've achieved in, you know, however long you've been out in the workforce. And that's a real opportunity to make sure in your resume that we see what you do, like really what you do. also the recommendations are important. And I think a lot of people get hung up on getting recommendations from people with fancy titles in their company.
That's right.
And my advice is get the recommendation from the person who knows you best and cares about you and actually wants to write the recommendation themselves, is excited to write about your what you've accomplished. That person is going to really write something so much more interesting and so much more telling about who you are as a person. They're really going to give us the information we're hoping for, even constructive information, because we want to know what are your gaps? How are you going to improve? And, you know, the CEO of your company, unless that CEO is the person who knows you well, the CEO of your company may not have the time or inclination to do that.
Right, right.
And then we're also looking at, we have a couple of essays that ask you really more personality questions. You know, tell us something surprising about yourself. And that's a key question, because we want to get to know you as a human being. To us, our students are full stories. They're not just, you know, they're not just numbers or data on a spreadsheet. And we want to think of you as a human. So the more of that information we have, the better.
In terms of work experience, I think applicants tend to focus on, I'm so many years out, you know, I'm
right.
so many years out of college. But there's a whole qualitative aspect to work experience.
Definitely.
What makes for qualitatively impressive work experience? Is that they worked at a large corporation? I mean, they got hired by, you know, they got through a grueling hiring process, which
right.
probably helps.
Sure.
What makes for good work experience if you didn't get through a grueling hiring process? Or even if you got through one, what makes for a good experience on the job?
Yeah, I think kind of seeing what that person has done with what they have or where they've gone. So you can work at a big name company and it's impressive that you got to work in that company, but you've been at the same level of analyst and you haven't really had any leadership opportunities and you're just kind of sitting there, probably exactly like doing a decent job, but you're just kind of like trucking along. And relative to your peers, is that impressive? I don't know, because we're probably looking at you relative to the other people from that type of company that's applying. Not that we compare applicants at all, and not that we have minimums or anything like that, but we kind of know in a job, is this impressive? Whereas someone who works for, you know, maybe a small family business, but is really taking on a lot of opportunity, has opened a new office, has done something else, that might be even more interesting leadership experience that they bring to class. Or someone who works in a small consulting firm, but has been able to travel or do something global with that, or has led a team with a particular client, and that client is so excited that they've written the recommendation. I mean, it's really what you've done with where you've been.
Okay, great. And what about, now let's go to kind of the other end.
Yeah.
I think admissions is very much recruiting driven.
Yep.
And I think that choice of school is very much recruiting driven on the applicant side.
Definitely.
So what are the hiring strengths at Columbia?
Yeah.
Well, and again, we're still talking about the full-time program.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, again, it ends up back at that question of access. We have a student, actually, he just graduated, and he would talk about how, again, with those coffee chats, he would meet again and again with different alumni in different companies. And what ended up happening, he found himself at an interview for his dream company, and he was going into tech, so it wasn't necessarily the sort of on-campus recruiting model, but it was a more structured interview, and he was there, and there were other, you know, people he kind of knew or people he knew were from other schools, and they were very, you know, there, it was very formal for them, just a regular interview for them. He walks into the room, and because he'd been to this company so many times, meeting a bunch of different people through these coffee chats, that when he walked in, they said, oh, hey, you know, how's it going? How are you? How have you been? What's going on? And so for him, it was just this easy, he knew that he was a good fit because he already had done that research. He had developed those relationships.
Yeah.
He already felt like one of them. And so, of course, he nailed that interview and got that job. And I think it's just a question of, you know, if you have the ability to develop a relationship with people and get introduced to a series of different people in a company, it's going to be so much easier to do that over time, over a semester, than to have to plan your, you know, plan your trip and take the train or the plane in,
yeah,
and just be in New York for a couple of days to interview with some people or to try and network in a more condensed way. I think it just gets to evolve naturally. And then we, you know, we have an incredibly strong career management group. We have amazing clubs that are bringing speakers and coaches and all of that onto campus. So you're gonna be very polished. You're going to have that opportunity to do practice interviews and to look at your resume and all of those sort of technical things that you need to do. But I think it's that research component that is unique to Columbia.
Okay. Now let's turn to the EMBA. There are three EMBA programs at Columbia Business School in addition to the two full-time programs. So that's what I was talking about when I talked about delicious
31 menu. Flavors.
Exactly. What is the common to the EMBA programs? And then we'll go into what is different about the three EMBA programs. It's the EMBA New York, EMBA Americas, and EMBA Global. So what's common to the three of them, and then we'll go to the differences.
Absolutely. I'll start with EMBA Americas and EMBA New York, because I think those programs, those are really just Columbia Business School programs. The global programs are a little different, so I'll keep them apart for now. But the Columbia EMBA programs have the same core that the full-time has, so you're getting some of those same foundation skills. You are doing it, it's really a very similar program. It's the size and the structure and the day of the week that you meet that's different.
Really?
So for EMBA Friday, Saturday, which is our flagship of the New York program, there are two streams in New York, Friday, Saturday, and Saturday. We're bringing in roughly 144 students each year. They start in August, so that feels closer to the traditional program, but it's a 20-month program, excuse me, for Friday, Saturday. So it's the same length. You don't have the summer internship, so it's 5 semesters, because an EMBA student, you can't take quite as many courses as a full-time student because you are working full-time, but it is considered a full-time program. You're taking 12 credits, which the university determines is full-time. So these people are accomplished. I'm not, you know, they are able to juggle things in ways. Some of them have babies while they're in the program. It's an amazing group of people. I actually worked in EMBA for 7.5 years, so it's very near and dear to my heart. But so that Friday, Saturday program has the same course structure. They do it across two semesters instead of one. And then they're taking electives, and they can take electives on any format. So we have the Friday, Saturday, we have Saturday, and then we have what is a modular format, and that kind of corresponds to the Americas program. But the modular format is 1 week, where you'll have an intensive elective that is a week long, and it's students from all of those different programs coming to take that elective. You do a little work beforehand, reading, you take the elective, you do a final deliverable afterwards, and it's kind of a condensed format. Our Friday, Saturday students have class. There are 9 weeks. 9 weekends of Friday, Saturday, all day Friday, all day Saturday. They need to be sponsored by their company for time, not necessarily financially, but the company needs to let them out of work on those Fridays.
Sure.
And that's their structure. And then in electives, they can do whatever works for them. The Saturday format is 13 Saturdays, all day Saturday. And they are actually a 24-month program. So Saturday is a little bit longer.
It has to be
because there's only one day that, you know, there are only so many time slots in a day where they can, when we can fit in classes. So they actually have core for the first 2.5 semesters. And then they're doing electives. Americas it's a slightly newer program, but it is designed for people who are coming from further away. Although a lot of the students in Americas are actually in New York, but you know, a good chunk of them are coming from Latin America, all over the country. We have students from California, students from Canada, sometimes students from Europe and a little bit further away, but for the most part, it's kind of the Americas, hence the name.
And the New World.
And exactly. During the core, they take class for 1 week each month, roughly for the first 3 semesters. That third semester is actually an elective semester, but the reason why they still stick to that 1 week a month model is to spread out a course called Capital Markets. It's an elective, but it's kind of structured the way that a core course would be structured, and there's too much to really get through. It's quantitative. You're not going to get through that in 1 week.
Yeah.
So they have that format for the first three semesters, and then they can take electives again on whatever format they want. So it really is just that. It's just the time of when you can take things, when you can get off of work, and you know what fits best with your schedule.
All right. So this was the EMBA Globals is the more modular.
So EMBA Global program is also on that modular format. That it's similar to America's. The difference with the two global programs, or the two global streams, mm-hmm. one is EMBA Global Americas and Europe, and that is a partnership with London Business School. Mm-hmm. So the core, it does have a core, but the core incorporates courses not only from Columbia, but also from LBS. And half is taught by Columbia, half is taught by LBS. Uh-huh. And then in electives, those students can take their electives at LBS, they can take them at Columbia. It's a little bit more open for them.
And it's still modular.
Still modular. LBS also has kind of, you know, that equivalent of our Friday, Saturday courses.
And right. They also have a lot of options.
They do have a lot of options. Yeah. So students kind of they can really tailor their electives to whatever structure works best for them in that particular semester, and then they can change it in the next semester. And you know, maybe they do Saturday one semester because they're living in New York that semester, right. But then they decide to do block week because they've just moved to Russia, and you know, all of a sudden they can't come to.
Wow.
Yeah. So very global. And then the other stream is EMBA Global Asia, which is an amazing program. It's a partnership with London Business School and Hong Kong University, and that program, the bulk of that program happens physically in Asia, in Hong Kong. They come to New York twice, they go to LBS twice, and then in electives they can go again wherever they want in those three schools. But the thing to know about EMBA Global Asia, because it's only a third, so it's a third Columbia, a third LBS taught, and a third Hong Kong University taught core, they get a joint degree. It's the only program where they get a joint degree from LBS, Hong Kong University, and Columbia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Who would you say these different – well, first let me ask this question before I ask among those different programs. Is normally when you say executive MBA, the assumption is that it's for somebody a little bit more advanced in their career mm-hmm. than the typical full-time MBA, more experienced. And since Columbia doesn't have a part-time program, mm-hmm. is the EMBA basically a part-time program and the level of experience is pretty much the same, or is – valued the same way as a full-time program? So is it the structure that's defining the student body, or is it really a level of experience? I think that's the best way for me to ask the question.
I would hesitate to say that we are a part-time program, because again, it doesn't feel part-time to the students there. They're taking a full load. And they also, the way EMBA programs are structured, the EMBA space, there are certain things that come with that. You get your books shipped to you, you do an international seminar, you have catering for breakfast and lunch, just to kind of make some of those life...
That's executive part.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Like, to make some of those life things just a little bit easier while you're juggling, you know, life and work and school. So that is structured in a way that a part-time program is not structured. It's also lockstep, so you are networking and getting to know these other students in this really intensive way. They have clusters in EMBA the same way they do in full-time. You are developing relationships in a way that I also don't think is common or necessarily inherent to a part-time program, because it's more commuter style. People can kind of come in for one class or another class, and it's not lockstep in the same way. So EMBA is too structured to say it's a part-time program.
Okay.
That said, to answer your question, I would absolutely say that it is not necessary for someone to have, you know, reams and reams of work experience. You don't have to have the giant CV. We are going to look more closely at work experience probably than academics for EMBA students, because they do tend to be a little further out from school.
Mm-hmm.
But it is more, the question you should ask yourself is, do I want to keep working while I'm getting this degree? If the answer is yes, EMBA is probably the right fit for you. If you're only, you know, 2 years out of school, we'll still look at you, but you may, you know.
Be a disadvantage.
Well, it's not necessarily that. Again, it depends on what you've done in those 2 years. Yeah. But the thing that I think is unique to our EMBA classroom is that you have, you know, 60 different people sitting around the room with incredible experience that they're bringing to that class. So it's not just the professor who's the expert. You might be reading a case where someone in the room was working for that company in that department during that business case and can kind of, again, bring that real world experience.
Right.
And if you only, you know, if you're very junior in your career, you're going to bring something, but you have to think about what are you, you know, how comfortable, what are you going to bring? And the thing I would recommend, and this is for any program, if you can, come and visit. We offer classes, sit in on a class, talk to some students. There are ways on our website where you can sign up for the classes, where you can sign up to talk to a student on the website. And that's the only way you're going to know how you're going to feel.
Right. No, I completely agree.
Yeah.
We are constantly telling applicants, go visit if at all possible.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not possible.
And if it's not, that's fine. But
right.
You wouldn't buy a car without driving it first, right? And this is a big investment.
You also wouldn't buy a condo or a house. And,
right.
And the investment is probably closer in size to that, actually.
That's true. Not in New York, but
maybe not in New York. Maybe not in Los Angeles either, but in most parts of the country.
That's right.
What about the admissions process for the EMBA programs?
Yeah. The admissions process is similar. So for all of our programs, we have what we call a rolling admissions process. And this is very different from all of our peer schools. They have rounds. We have rolling. It's totally different. Rolling, if you think about it as a supply-demand problem, rolling admission means that we have all the seats at the beginning of the process, and we're reading applications. I'm reading applications now for next August. And you read applications, and within 6 weeks of the time that the applicant submits their application, we tell them whether or not they're going to be interviewed. 2 weeks after the interview, we tell them whether or not they've been admitted. So
wow.
it can be a quick process depending on how long it takes to schedule your interview. And that means that at the beginning of the process, we have all the seats. At the end of the process, we still have seats, but not as many. It's a little more competitive. Now, that I think it becomes more competitive on the full-time side. In EMBA, there's a human nature element where a lot of people do actually apply close to the deadline.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that is still a factor, but as long as you're applying, you know, within a month of the deadline, you're probably in good shape.
So that would also give the person who applies earlier, I think, more of an advantage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so for EMBA, the things we're looking for, again, we're looking at academics. You will be asked to take a test. For EMBA, though, you can take a new test called the Executive Assessment, which is created by the same people that created GMAT. But the part of the test that in some ways is the most important is that integrated reasoning piece. And we find with people who've been in the workplace for a while, especially people who have, you know, led teams or really done something substantive, the IR should be almost second nature to them. That is what they're using day to day.
If they're in a management role, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the executive assessment doesn't require all of the studying and kind of time commitment that maybe the GMAT requires.
Right.
So we find it's been popular with executive MBA applicants. But that is the only really big difference in the application itself. The other thing is we have three essay questions for all of our applicants. One of the essay questions on the full-time side is what will you do in New York? How are you going to take advantage of the city? For the EMBA students, many of whom are local to New York, they've already taken advantage of it. For the EMBA students, that question is, how are you going to balance work, life, and school?
Yeah, that's a key question for EMBA applicants.
You have to know how you're going to do that.
Yeah.
So that is the main difference in the application. How we're reading the application, again, we're looking for stories. We're looking for whole people. And in EMBA, we're probably weighting that career piece, that work experience and professional promise piece a little bit more heavily than we're going to weight the academics.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
What is the typical career benefit of the EMBA programs?
Yeah.
And is there a difference between the programs? But
yeah, I mean, I think the difference between the EMBA formats has more to do with what career you're in now and how able you are to get different types of time off, I think. So originally, like, the Saturday program was designed for people who were maybe even a little more junior in their career, who couldn't necessarily get those Fridays off, or people who were, and it's turned out that we have very similar people in Friday, Saturday, and Saturday. It's just, for whatever reason, that company, it's much harder to get the Fridays off, right? So we see that in the Americas program. We do see more people, again, in family business and in entrepreneurship because there tends to be a little bit more flexibility there.
Sure.
And again, those people might be coming from further afield, especially family business. A lot of people in Latin America are coming in from family business. So we do see a little bit more of that in the Americas format. It definitely exists in all of the formats, though. In terms of the benefit, because I do think a lot of people will say to themselves, oh, well, or one might think that applicants would say to themselves, well, I'm in a good place in my career. Why do I need the MBA?
Yeah.
And the EMBA students I've spoken with, first of all, they also want that holistic mindset. So they might be really good at what they do, whatever that silo is.
Right.
But they may not be thinking in terms of all of the different pieces of the puzzle. And I have heard time and again from EMBA students how, you know, they took a course on Friday and then they learned about a model and they were able to bring that model, you know, in to work on Monday and just solve this business problem that's been bothering them for months.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, from that perspective, there is this real-time experience, which I think, again, makes EMBA kind of unique. You really are able to apply what you're learning, so you're learning it very deeply. But also, you're able to apply what you're learning, so your company's getting something out of those Fridays they're letting you out, or, you know, those weeks each month. So there is that kind of give and take that is good for EMBA students to sometimes remind their company of, you know,
yes,
make sure that they really remember what they're bringing to the table. We also see EMBA students are making those same network connections that we see the full-time students making. And I was thinking about an alum, and I used to work in EMBA, so I was, you know, close to this alum, and he's a wonderful person, but he came from a finance background. He had been in the Air Force as a reservist. When he came to class, he would have these opportunities to, you know, write papers about real-life cases, you know, write about a business problem you experienced.
Yeah.
And he would write about how services for vets were so disjointed and so difficult to navigate, and why is this a problem? And he started thinking about how can we create some sort of tech platform to just make this better, make this more, you know, more reasonable, easier for people, more functional, exactly. And he met two other students at Columbia. One was actually a full-time student, but two other students who were sort of thinking about similar things. And they started a company. And they were able to start this incredible company that is essentially that platform for, they started with government and they started with military services because that's what they knew best. And they're now looking to kind of, explore other avenues. But where they are doing things like connecting, okay, people who need healthcare frequently need housing as well. So if they don't have healthcare, if they're having major health problems, they may be in danger of homelessness or other issues. So making sure that these two things are kind of linked up and you know, linking up all of these other things and working with the government and all of these different social services to try and bring these things together in a coherent way. They were able to pitch this to the professors. They were able to work out the kinks through courses. They ended up as alumni pitching it to our board of overseers. I mean, they just had access to so many things that they could do. Our Lang Center for Entrepreneurship, they had access to so many resources to help them really hone this idea that it's been a very successful company and it's really working and, you know, they're helping all of these people.
Fantastic.
So you kind of see, you know, this was someone who was working in finance. He probably had a great career. You know, he could have just stayed there.
Yeah.
And done really well.
Made bolos.
Exactly. But he, you know, he wanted to do something a little bit more and he found a place with the tools to really put all of the pieces together to find the incredibly strong people that he could bring on his team. And, you know, it's a great success story. We love that. But
yeah,
really making a difference that he cares about.
And your story also kind of leads to my next question, which is, well, how much do the EMBA and the full-time students mix, mm-hmm. whether it's J-term or September entry, and the different EMBA programs? I mean, do the EMBA students network among themselves, among the different programs? Do they meet and take advantage of the, you know, of the networking opportunities at Columbia Business School on campus?
Yeah.
I mean, how much of that is going on, both between the full-time and EMBA and among the different EMBA programs?
So among the different EMBA programs, absolutely. I think with each program during your core, especially, you're kind of in this, not a bubble, but you are absolutely focused on the people in your cluster, the people who you've started with. But once you start electives, you start seeing people from other groups. So EMBA students can take full-time MBA electives. You know, it depends on where you are and kind of the timing. And MBA students can take EMBA electives as well. And again, it sort of depends for them on, you know, what timing works for them. But there are usually block weeks at a certain time of the year that mix both groups. So you will see both groups in electives. And then within EMBA, those block weeks are really for people in global, people in Americas, and people in Friday, Saturday, and Saturday. They are all taking those block weeks. They all do what we call international seminars, which are essentially going to another country and studying a particular economy or business problem.
That can be for any of the programs.
The international seminar is specific to EMBA, okay. But it does bring all of the EMBA students together to do that one course. There is a similar type of course for the full-time students, international study tours, and then global immersion programs. And those are again, courses where, you know, they're going abroad and they're, you know, doing consulting projects potentially, or they're meeting with companies in that other country to learn about the economy, learn about a particular business industry or problem. So similar experiences for both groups, and but it's a little bit different because it's part of tuition. Uh-huh. So the trip is paid for in a slightly different way. Which is standard for EMBA programs generally, but we have choices of a lot of them, which is not always standard. So there is interaction within the electives. There is also interaction in the clubs. And I think at that point you start, and there are networking opportunities. We have EMBA sort of leaders within each EMBA class on the student government as well. So there's a mixing between kind of leaders of the full-time and the EMBA program. There are, you know, the happy hours where people are invited to each other's happy hours and things like that. The clubs are there. A lot of what the clubs do is recruiting focused, but a lot of it is also bringing speakers onto campus. So you do have EMBA students participating in either side of that, but you primarily see the EMBA students a little more interested in the speakers coming to campus. There is always fear of missing out with any of these programs. We have over 450 speakers who come to campus every year. So
that's 1.5 a day.
I know. It's you cannot see everyone.
Right.
So again, there is that need to really hone in on what do you care most about and how are you going to take advantage of that. So you might, you know, EMBA students are not going to have the bandwidth. They work during the week. They're not going to be able to come to campus every day to see a speaker. The full-time students in reality also don't have the time to do that because they're also looking for jobs and doing all this other stuff. But you probably see EMBAs coming for, you know, very targeted specific things. And then there are a lot of speaking, you know, things that will come to campus for EMBA. But in terms of the interaction, if you are a student who really wants to interact with full-time students and you're an EMBA, you're going to have so many opportunities to do that. You do have to commit to that being important to you in order to go to those things.
The opportunity is there. Where the time is there, that's something else.
Exactly. And that's true for, you know, there are going to be trade-offs with any of these formats, whether it's, you know, January program has trade-offs, the full-time program has trade-offs, EMBA's going to have some trade-offs as well.
But EMBA students can, and to the extent they have the time, they can participate in clubs, they can participate in many of the extracurricular activities that are offered at Columbia.
Absolutely. Yep.
What question do you wish I had asked?
Well, I think we touched on it, because the question I get the most is sort of, as an applicant, what should I do? What should I be thinking about?
Yeah.
And it really is thinking about that strategy, thinking about what you want to get out of this. And we ask that as the essay question for a reason. We want you to be thinking about this before you come to campus. So that's part of it. And then also, you know what you're investing in. You, if you can, definitely visit. If you can't visit, there are ways you can contact a student and talk to them on the phone. We as admissions officers are certainly traveling all over the world right now, for sure. Yes. And so we want to make sure that we are meeting people, that they are coming to our info sessions and learning a little bit about us. We also tend to have alumni at our information sessions, so they can get that perspective from someone who has been a student and just, just do a little bit of research, really know what you're getting yourself into. Because I think the stronger, A, you need to know what you're investing in just for your own, you know, well-being.
Sure, sure.
But also we, when we're reading your application, we're going to, the more you know and the more kind of contact you've made, the more inside view you have, the better you'll understand how you're going to fit within that picture. And you'll be able to describe that so much more lucidly to us than if you're just kind of reading our website. Our website's great, but it's, you know, it's not enough.
It's a good foundation.
Exactly.
It's a good beginning.
Yeah.
No, it definitely pays to go beyond that. Oh, I know. I had one more question. We didn't discuss at all early decision versus regular decision for the full-time program. So before I ask my last question, I'm going to ask this next to last question.
That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that back. Early decision is a wonderful opportunity. Again, there's that you know, supply-demand question. So if you're applying early, you know, there's a little bit of an advantage. You're first in line for us to read your application. Do not apply to early decision unless you know that Columbia is where you want to go because it is binding. So if you've applied to Columbia early decision and you get accepted, we ask that you withdraw your application from any other school. And, you know, so you want to make sure that Columbia is really where you want to be. You also want to make sure that there aren't other major factors impacting that decision. So if you have a significant other who may or may not move to New York, you know, if you have, that's big, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a really amazing job somewhere completely different and you don't want to be away from them for 2 years. That should be part of what you're thinking about.
Absolutely.
If you need money, we do have both merit-based fellowships and need-based scholarships. It's an amazing opportunity when we're able to give those to people. We do not usually offer those to people with admission. So you may not know if you have that scholarship or that merit-based fellowship when you get admission and even when you are required to put down the deposit. So for early decision, you know, you should really have a sense of what, you know, what you need to do, and you should know that Columbia is where you want to be no matter what. Regular decision, you can still apply on the early side and apply regular decision. You can apply regular decision, I would say, all the way up through, there's a deadline in January that is our merit-based fellowship deadline. And that is when most people apply. Human nature being what it is, people tend to wait to the last minute. But again, if you can apply a bit earlier than that, you're kind of hitting the wave of applicants.
Yeah.
If you apply in April, which is when our final deadline is, we are absolutely still accepting people who apply in April, but we might be looking for specific things at that point. We want to have a very diverse class. We might be rounding out the class. So that is when we would probably, you know, it's more competitive at that point.
Right. Probably, yeah. Rounding out the class.
It's a lot of luck if you're getting in April.
Right.
Yeah.
And probably pretty stellar qualifications, I would assume, or a specific niche that you feel will really add to the class.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. And now, any last nuggets of advice? You've been giving great advice the whole time, so I don't know if you have anything left that you can pull out of your hat.
Oh, I think the most important piece of advice is be yourself in the application. Every once in a while, we will read an application from someone who just seems like they're trying to wedge their story into some preconceived notion they have of what admissions people want, and it doesn't line up. And you see them saying they care so much about X, but there's no X anywhere else in their resume or in their background. Or they, you know, they're just trying to really hit hard something professional in the essay that's supposed to be personal. And, you know, we read that and say, yeah, I know, I read your resume, but who are you? I want to get to know you. So be yourself. Don't worry about who else is applying. Don't worry about, you know, who am I competing with? You are competing with yourself. And actually, enrolling admissions, you're really competing with yourself because we haven't read everybody else yet. We're reading you in that moment and deciding, are you someone we want to see on campus? We care about nice students. So, our students are nice and engaged. And those are two qualities that are almost more important to us than the GMAT. I mean, they are more important to us than the GMAT. If we get a sense that you are completely transactional, that you're just checking the box, that you're not telling us who you are as a human being, we just assume that's what you're going to be like on campus.
Right. Makes sense to me. I think it's really, really good advice. I can't even tell you how many times I've told applicants, you know, they said, do you think I should spin it this way? Mm-hmm. I'm like, forget about spin. Yeah. This is not a ball.
I love that.
Okay. I'm actually not a bad ping pong player. I know how to spin a ball. No, this is not what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
They have to present themselves. Sometimes have to think about themselves.
Yep.
And the other thing I think that goes along with what you were just saying is you're presenting yourself through all interactions with the school.
Yes.
Okay. So if things don't add up, then it's like, well, I want something to add up.
Yeah.
You know, I assume that's what's going on your end. But when things don't add up, it doesn't reflect very well on the column of numbers. I shouldn't say column of numbers. They'll have the wrong connotation. But that doesn't to the elements that you're looking at.
Yeah. And the best asset a candidate has is themselves. And if you are yourself the entire time, then things will add up because you are just being yourself.
Right. Emily, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure. I mean, it's really different having you sitting here. You don't know, but I'll tell you, it's a lot better. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Columbia Business School's MBA programs, all X of them?
So www.columbia.edu, just go there and you will find all kinds of wonderful information about the school, but more importantly, if you look under admissions and admissions events on our website, then you will see all kinds of opportunities to visit campus, visit a class, see us while we're on the road, contact a student. All of those things are there on the website. And, you know, just the best thing you can do is reach out. We want to hear from you.
Okay. We'll include links in the show notes at exhibit.com/171 to the sites Emily just mentioned, as well as to related articles and show notes. Listener, thank you too for joining Emily French Thomas, Director of Admissions at Columbia Business School, and me for our 171st episode. I would like to share with you, listener, a recent 5-star review from MBA Hopeful 247. She wrote, "This podcast is a must for any prospective MBA student. Every MBA episode has great tips and unique guests. Where else can you find interviews with admissions directors, students, and alums from the top schools all in one place?" Linda also has episodes where she interviews fellow consultants and provides a deep dive on specific topics, such as overcoming weaknesses. I highly recommend this podcast for any MBA hopeful. Thank you, Linda, for producing an amazing podcast. Well, you're most welcome, MBA Hopeful 247, and thank you so much for providing such amazing feedback. I appreciate it, and I even appreciate just the simple fact that you took the time to provide this feedback. Best wishes for your success in the MBA application process. Now, listener, if you find the show worthwhile, could you please do as did MBA Hopeful and share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes? Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admissions Straight Talk, especially if you leave, like MBA Hopeful did, 5-star feedback. So if you think Admissions Straight Talk deserves 5 stars, please let iTunes know. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave that review. And the show notes, again, are accepted.com/171. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.